Hello there, this is Cătălin Câmpano, editor of the Risky Business News newsletter, and welcome to Risky Business News Talks, a special series part of our podcast where we interview folks from the cybersecurity industry on topics that aren't particularly news-related. In our first episode, our guest is Yuri Ackerman, a FIDO consultant with a very interesting job title as Vice President of War Efforts at HIDES, a Ukrainian security firm specialized in identity services. Since the start of the Russian-Ukrainian war, Yuri has been working with HIDES to distribute YubiKey hardware security keys throughout the Ukrainian government as a way to secure their accounts against the waves of attacks from Russian threat actors trying to worm their way into Ukrainian networks. So, Yuri, tell us how this project got started.
I've been doing FIDO consulting for the last 4 years. And one of the projects I've been doing is I was just kind of like cooperating with this Ukrainian company called HIDES. You know, they were kind of cool guys. We met them over some events, and we started to do some work together, some clients together, some very small things, mostly on like friends cooperation. You know, doing some presentations together, trying to spread information about the FIDO in the Russian-speaking area, so Ukraine, Russia, et cetera, et cetera. And then the war started, you know, and that was just such a shock. Like, you just, you know, could not believe that it happened. And the founder of HIDES, Oleg, who's now back to Kiev, you know, he became like a good friend of mine over the years, and he just, you know, ended up stuck in the underground car park, you know, in the freezing cold. You know, it's minus six degrees, and so we spent a week of like figuring out how to get him out of Kiev. You know, we found him a place to stay in West Ukraine, you know, my in-laws' place, pretty much, and he stayed there. And so as soon as he got back from there, you know, his company specializes in enterprise identity solutions and authentication, so they have FIDO server, they have their FIDO security key. And we, as soon as he was, you know, in safety, you know, we started to discuss, well, how can we help? We had some contacts and some projects that we were discussing before the war about with critical infrastructure providers. You know, but as soon as the war started, we went back and being like, hey, do you want to put it on priority? Because we're like, you don't even need to tell us the numbers, but we're pretty sure you have like phishing problem. And so they came back actually to us with the numbers. So after some time with the corporation, so the numbers we saw were like last year, they've seen 21,000 security events. And this is a company that has 50,000 employees. It's massive critical infrastructure providers. And this year they've seen in 1 month of the war, 760,000 events. So they were under massive like attacks of all sorts, like, you know, obviously phishing and password brute force has been a major component. You know, obviously there's port scanning and things like this and trying to abuse RDP and things like that. So we started to push, deploy, building new contacts. We went to YubiKey. We were like, hey, we literally asked, hey, YubiKey, could you give us like a couple of keys, thinking they're going to send us a couple of hundred? And they came back in an hour saying, yes, here's 20,000 keys. Where do you want to ship them? So all of a sudden we're like, okay, well, we can do more things. So we started to push harder, do newer deployments, building new relationships, building internal Ukrainian strategy, and slowly building up our access to the high levels of the government, building understanding what is FIDO, what is password authentication, what is phishing resistant authentication, what is phishing actually, even basic things. And so these days we're working very, very tightly with Ukrainian ministries, like Ministry of Digital Transformation, the National Defense and Security Council, who manages, well, national defense security for the whole country, the strategy part, and with this, they have a wonderful name, State Special Services for Communications Information Protection. So we work with them very tightly on bringing other agencies, bringing other ministries, you know, on building trust, building explanation. We got YubiKey certified, and, you know, so they are officially allowed to be deployed within Ukraine instances. So we've been, for the last 3 months, we've been just working like hell trying to deploy it. We're doing it completely for free. So YubiKeys are being given for free away with official documentation that we're actually transferring you this stuff. Because the way they work in Ukraine is that you have to put them on your company balance. So we officially import them, officially sign up all the certification documentation. They fall on our company balance. And then whenever we sign up a project and so on, we officially transfer the amount that agreed on the other company, on the ministry or organization balance, and like ship them the devices.
Sorry to interrupt. So how many of the 20,000 YubiKey devices have you deployed until now?
So far we've deployed 10,000, which is less than what we wanted. We found there is some bureaucracy we unfortunately have to deal with. There is a big lack of understanding what it is. Like, it is, and this is actually, you and me, we've been working with this industry for quite some time. You know what FIDO is, right? I know what FIDO is. We know how to write it. We're able to even read about it, right? We can open Wired, Ars Technica, or anything like this. We can understand, like, from like basic perspective, what the hell is this? There is nothing of this in Ukraine. Absolutely. And not just in Ukraine, actually. If you think about that, probably because you're in Romania, right?
Yes.
So if you would go to Romania to anybody and say FIDO.
So your problem is basically convincing the older government employees who aren't technically savvy individuals.
Yeah. So
right?
it's just talking about savviness. It's just about not just like employees, we're talking about specialists, we're talking about the ministers, we're talking about people who are making decisions, deputies and so on, and who are technically working in cyberspace, and they have no idea what is FIDO. They have no idea. Some of them had no idea what is PIV, and I would not just go and blame them. That how could they not know? I see this as a problem in our community, that we don't put into our mind that not everybody speaks English, and that not everybody is able to go and digest this information or have access to it.
Would your issues be related to the fact that many Ukrainian government systems don't support FIDO and they need FIDO support first before deploying the YubiKeys?
No. So we deal with various environments. So first of all, the way we work, okay, is that we have quite a few ministries who just moved a lot of their stuff to G Suite and Azure. With them, it's quite easy. You just pretty much give them a key, formatted instructions in Ukrainian, video instructions, and so on. And here is the video, here's the key, working out some of the integration issues, helping them with policy, and that's it. So it's really fast. We had like a department that pretty much moved to using FIDO and just like 500 people less than a week, because they just needed to understand their policies. We need to update some documentation, and that's it. And they just give the keys, enroll them, and voila. So that was quite easy. We have a lot of, but here's the thing. It's not just the fact that you say, well, infrastructure doesn't support FIDO. That is a reality in anywhere. Like if you go to any government, ministerial, agency or anywhere like this in US and Europe, it doesn't matter. They will not be able to support FIDO on infrastructure level, because lots of them have requirements of having only on-premises infrastructure. So you could do FIDO in like Microsoft environments if you Azure Active Directory bound, but not everybody can handle the cost, have a need, or have a policies that would allow it. YubiKeys in this matter are actually quite good, because actually YubiKeys are not just do FIDO, they can support multiple things. And one of the things, and they support PIV. So we heavily utilizing this thing, we're utilizing the YubiKeys as a smart card. So basically on domain authentication is done with the PIV. The cloud services, the internal, external, and so on, we provide them with, unless they have other company solutions, we provide them with our own solution that has support for SAML, OIDC, and so on, with a 3-year license. And we give government institutions 75% off for the second year. And it has all the connectors for this thing. So we work with them tightly to integrate all these things, understand scenarios, and obviously work very deeply with Yubico's teams to understand how these interconnections work as well, because Yubico has a fantastic technical team.
In the article you shared earlier, you said the goal of your project was the deployment of 100,000 YubiKeys and then 1 million keys.
Yes.
Would that be only government employees, or are you aiming for deployments in the private sector as well, like critical infrastructure operators?
Yeah, so this is government and critical sector. We as well supporting semi corporate critical sector companies. We're not filling them fully for free because they are still a commercial company, and this puts us in a little bit difficult position. But we still do give them free support. We give them very preferential licensing. We give them YubiKeys to some extent to some amount for free. And we work with them very tightly. If it is like we have a couple of critical infrastructure providers who are pretty much government owned, they kind of operate more like government structures, even though they are like semi-autonomous. And that actually kind of like brings in these budget questions, because they pretty much operate like a government institution with a government budget structure. So that means that as of now, they have no budget. And but if you're talking about commercial companies, they operate in very different, like, we have a couple of actual private companies who are actually as well critical infrastructure providers and work with them very tightly. So we operate with them on the fact that, they can pay, and just, we do give them a lot of stuff for free, but we can't just be everything for free because they're not a government agency. So, but we do support them as well. And the million keys, it includes mostly ministries, mostly government stuff, but it does include a lot of like private, local initiatives, etc.
Would any critical sectors benefit from your preferential treatment and receive your attention first, like healthcare or power grid operators?
Yeah.
Beyond those, are there any other critical sector entities that you're focusing on?
Logistics. We work with logistics. As I said, any energy sector is right on top of our list. Telecommunication is as well. Worked with a couple of them. Anything without what the country would fall apart, that pretty much is on top of our bucket list to work with.
So what percentage would you say of your 10,000 YubiKeys were deployed to government systems, and how many to critical sector operators? Do you have such a number?
I think it's about 50-50. So as of now, so we have the, as I said, like we've started with working with the critical infrastructure partners, and with whom we already had some plans before the war. And then with the war, they obviously accelerated those deployments. So they've been the first ones actually do. And actually through them, we started to build up our contacts within the government, higher in the chain. So that's why it's kind of like, as of now, it is 50-50. I specifically came to Ukraine to go and do some meetings and to kind of like present couple of things, as well as one of the things I found out we were lacking is lack of focus group testing. So we, everything we've done pretty much been remotely, so been remotely helping, remotely operating, and we had some meetings, not me personally, but my partners at Heidi's, they've been doing that, but we haven't had a proper, like, let's walk into the office and see how people are actually using it. So this is a very new story for Ukraine. So one of the big part of this thing is that go and see what's going on, what people actually in person reaction, and how can we, what we need to adjust in our policy, in our approach, in our documentation, what materials do we need to build in Ukrainian to help people deploy stuff faster and be more comfortable with technology?
Well, this seems like a pretty commercially heavy project. And you said you got the first 20,000 keys from Yubico for free. How do you plan on getting the rest? Do you have a plan to get more?
Yeah. So we are looking right. We're now working with actually a couple of nonprofits. We're in discussion with them to set up with them a structure, and so be able to purchase more keys. Yubico came forward and said that they will give us obviously preferential pricing on purchasing them. So right now we're actually looking for more funding. Yubico came out actually a few weeks ago and said they're going to give us another 10,000. So we have a total of promised 30,000 and 16,000 already in Ukraine. because we're bringing them in batches, because we don't, because another thing is that it's like, you know, the one of the things as well you need to understand about how we're deploying them, we don't just take the keys and like, so ministry, so for example, one of the projects we have, it is 11,000 users and a total of about 16,000 keys. So there's different scenarios. Some people we see it's more beneficial to have two keys, like remote workers, some in the office, one key, so on. So we don't just go and give them 16,000 keys and say bye. We work very much in actual results. So we gave them, so we started with a small batch, we gave them 500 keys and we say, let's deploy them, let's work out all your issues and so on. So work all those hurdles, documentation and so on. And then we've deployed more and more. And so now we already deployed more than 4,000 devices there and it accelerates on, there's many, many departments. So there's quite a very large, very complex architecture, infrastructure internally. So we actually work on the results. And that's why we kind of like import them in batches, is because we just don't feel comfortable to have holding like, you know, 30,000 keys on your hands in your apartment. This is like $1.5 million worth of devices. It's kind of scary to have so much tech in your house. So yeah, but we built our own logistics for that. And so we're able to import them and do all the stuff ourselves. I am not interested in seeing the stuff on the shelf. Like, my point is that Ukraine should become an example. You know, it should become an example for other countries who cannot afford, like, you know, we work in the same industry, right? You know how much of, like, is sold on the market as AI behavioral biometrics, anti-phishing system, and stuff like this. We cannot afford these things in Ukraine, because the difference between security and insecurity is between somebody's dying and somebody's living. So we cannot afford these things. And so this should become an example of how to actually effectively defend yourself, because we are dealing with the first cyber war in the human history, you know, and we're not dealing with the most smart or strong enemy. You know, we really, like, you know, it was more obvious to obviously Russian speaking audience that, you know, that Russia doesn't have as great cyber capabilities, but we're still very thankful that Russia is really, really bad at, you know, cyber warfare, because there would be China, it would be like, just, yeah.
So how is the Ukrainian government responding to your efforts? Do they see it as an annoyance? Do they see it as a long-term plan? Do they share your vision? I'm basically asking.
So they are, it took time. And they are coming. They're coming to understanding. Their issue, in some of the ways, was is that they're coming from an environment where they remember the RSA keys and things like this. And one of the questions we were asked is like, "Well, you're gonna give us like free keys, and then in 2 years we're gonna have to start to pay for the licenses for them." You know, the same way as you would do with RSA tokens. And so that brought us into completely rewriting our messaging, because, you know, we're people who are working with them, like, you know, especially like, you know, me and Heidi's, you know, despite the fact that Heidi's being US Ukraine company, its main business was actually outside of Ukraine. Like, so our message was built for people outside of Ukraine. And, you know, and I've just been to Identiverse, and then Identiverse was full of like passwordless this, passwordless that. But that's not the understanding here. You know, people have no idea what's passwordless. You say them passwordless, they think it's like, you know, it's insecure because there's only one factor. So we had to find ourselves in a situation where we suddenly understand that we're not in 2022, not in 2020, we're in 2014 regarding understanding of what a secure multi-factor authentication is. So right now we were able to build up a new messaging, new slides. We are working on the website in Ukrainian about this thing as well. And we have a positive note and a better understanding. So it took a bit of time. And overall, they are really interested into that. Right now, our work is in a lot of the ways is to get the government to go up and say that, yes, this is definitely part of our national security strategy. Yes, we definitely need more of that. You know, and not just saying we need more YubiKeys, but just saying we need more of secure phishing resistant solutions like that, you know, to looking with them as well to bring some approaches like 863, you know, the NIST standards, right? To have like, don't say FIDO, don't say this, just have specifically definitions for secure authentication and corresponding levels, which then can be either dictated or advised to the ministries for them that. So if there is a big lack of policy, and there's a quite as well painful. But overall, they're really liking what we're doing.
So it wouldn't be some sort of sci-fi scenario where in a few years all government workers would have a mandatory security key to access government systems, right?
Yes. Yes, I don't think this is science fiction. I'm pretty sure this is what's going to happen, because if you actually, we actually just set and did a rough calculation, right? So let's say, and I'm seeing from what I'm seeing, you know, Ukraine has still a big problem with the bureaucracy. So we have a lot of bureaucrats to secure, you know? So let's say that we need, you know, an actual million keys for a million people, just one-to-one, okay? And let's say we're buying them at actual market value. So let's UbiCorp sells them for $50. That's a $50 million. If you add there some infrastructure updates, configuration work, et cetera, we would be looking at about $150 to $200 million of investment. That is to make Ukraine pretty much de facto one of the most secure.
It's a cheap investment. For government, it's a very cheap investment.
Yes, for actually anything. Like, you think about a million people, you know, million very, like, you know, people with high level of access and so on, you know. And you're talking about everything from, like, the president himself to, like, you know, municipal, sub-deputy of the mayor. You know, that, you know, you suddenly have a country with whom fishing kind of pointless. And that's kind of like a very good financial statement you can make for other countries. For Georgia, you know, constantly under attack. Estonia has kind of like been on forefront for that with their digital ID, who uses smart cards, who kind of give similar levels, although they had their failures because they, you know, they've been trailblazers and so that. You know, for Latvia, Estonia, you know, when Russian regime will collapse and Lukashenko will be gone, as we know that Belarusians are not in support, that they're hostages of their crazy agri-Führer, you know, they will need defense as well. So they're talking about, like, you know, African countries, Middle East, there's a lot of, like, countries, small countries who needs these capabilities, who needs this kind of level of defenses. I'm not just even talking about, like, you know, like, you know, Korea. Korea is, like, you know, it has China and North Korea next to it. You know, they already been actually one of the largest deployers of like fighter in the world. So there's like the Ukraine will become this example of how do you actually effectively build up cyber strategy, and not just regarding the security keys, but overall. Because even though you don't have a strong like authentication production, you still manage to do a pretty decent cyber defense with very little budget. So Ukraine will, you know, has to become this example for the rest of the countries to follow its lead. And just pointing out, like, just to mention, like, a thing, you know, Ubico are just crazy. Just, like, I never seen a company like this before in my life. Just, we had to stop their CTO from physically traveling to Ukraine and delivering the keys, because it took us, like, 2.5 weeks to sort out the logistics, because we need to understand all the permits for all official import, because we don't just bring the YubiKeys in the backpack through the border. They're actually coming in officially getting stamped and officially brought in. YubiKeys just gave us so much support.
Thank you, Yuri. Good luck with your project, and I hope this war ends soon so we can go back to worrying about silly ransomware gangs again. Hope everyone enjoyed this interview, and you'll hear from us again soon.